If you snooze, you lose. That's what one major contract found out in court the hard way when its financing partners failed to file certain paperwork. Joining me with a cautionary story, procurement attorney Joseph Petrillo of Petrillo & Powell. And Joe, this is involving a very big contractor, which did something that was sort of surprising in the way it approached a contract. Tell us about this case.
Sure. This is a case involving Northrop Grumman Computing Systems, and it involved a lease of software to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And like many government leases, it was written for a base year and option years, in this case, three option years, so 4 years total. If all the options had been exercised. The contract also obligated the government to use its best efforts to seek funding. But after the first year, the government did not exercise an option because it said that funding wasn't available. And the contractor brought a claim at the brought a claim under the Contract Disputes Act, saying that that had been a breach of the government's obligation to seek funding. And it's went through a couple of iterations, and at the end of the day, the court never had to reach that issue because the trial court dismissed the case on procedural grounds, and the appellate court, the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, recently affirmed that in a kind of surprising ruling.
All right, before we get to the surprise in the ruling, let me just back up for a moment. And the contractor said, Northrop Grumman said that the government failed to seek funding. How can they know that? I mean, if it was put into a request for appropriations and then denied by Congress, what else is the agency ordinarily required to do?
Well, I'm not sure that it's very clear in terms of what is included in a request to Congress or what isn't included in a request to Congress. As you know, operations and maintenance funds are a huge pot, and what actually is in that pot is somewhat confusing. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure it's easy to suss that out. But in this instance, the court didn't have to deal with that issue.
There was something else, though, that the contractor had done, which got it into trouble later on.
Right, or actually, in this case, hadn't done. What it did was it financed the contract by selling the receivables to one company, and then they sold it to a bank, and so it was resold. But this particular financing was not approved under the Assignment of Claims Act. There's a procedure for doing that, and when the financing party observes those obligations and the contractor goes through the process, the receivables can be assigned to the financing party, and the government pays them directly. In this case, they didn't do that. So the mechanism was that the government would pay the contractor, and the contractor would then transfer those payments over to the bank that had bought the receivables.
Why would a company of that scale need to finance this contract in the first place, do you suppose?
Well, it's fairly commonly done. It's a way to convert a payment stream under a lease that stretches out over several fiscal periods into a sale that is recognized immediately. What happens is when the receivables are sold, that income is treated as a sale, and the companies involved in that get to treat that as immediate income.
So they get the whole first year of the lease in one lump payment.
Exactly. And so that's the part of the attraction of it for the company. And, you know, in other instances where the contractor is purchasing items for a long-term lease, it really needs to get financing to do that for a variety of reasons. These deals are not so unusual.
We're speaking with Joe Petrillo, a procurement attorney with the law firm Petrillo & Powell. And so you're saying, though, the way in which this assignment was done or not done is what actually the court looked at.
Well, I think that's what folks in the financing industry are hoping for. Because what the court held ultimately was, since the contractor had been paid all the money it expected under the contract, there were no damages when the government failed to renew the contract. In essence, a third party, an unrelated third party, the bank had paid the contractor for what it expected to get under the contract. And so the fact that the government didn't pay the contractor meant the contractor suffered no damages at all. This is kind of peculiar because what's happened here is a totally unrelated third party that owes the government no obligations at all has discharged the government's obligations by financing the contract. And, you know, it's kind of a very strange result in that sense.
So if the assignment had been followed through on with the legalities required for assignment, then the court might have gotten to that issue of whether the government actually sought financing.
Apparently so. The court said that when it distinguished a different case, an earlier case from 1966, it said, well, in this instance, the contractor did not obtain permission for the assignment under the Assignment of Claims Act. So we're all hoping on the contracting side that that's the way to distinguish these deals, because if not, then every government contract that has financing is in danger. As it is, I think there's jeopardy here for government contracts where there's financing, but the parties haven't done that under the Assignment of Claims Act. I think before this case, it was considered that appropriate to do so, but you take the risk that the contractor wouldn't pass the money along to you. Now, it looks like the government has no further obligation to the contractor. In fact, under this decision, it seems to me that the government could have exercised the option, kept the software, and not paid the contractor, because theoretically, the contractor would have had no damages since it had already been paid.
So the lesson here then is if you do an assignment of payment, make sure that you get it in legal format according to the law governing the assignment of payments.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to avoid this this kind of result. And if there are financings out there where that has not been done, I think this decision puts them at risk. I also think that the government will start to inquire of contractors whether they financed performance as a way of getting claims dismissed, because this case opens the door to that kind of argument, at least where there's no assignment.
Interesting. So we will never really know in this particular case because the assignment wasn't done according to the Assignment of Claims Act, and therefore the court did not rule on whether the government did its obligation under the original contract.
Right, right. And there's another aspect of this case which is also very strange. Initially, the trial court dismissed the case because the contractor did not say in its claim that it had financed the contract in this way and had these unrecognized assignments. That came out during the discovery phase. When the government found out about it, they moved to dismiss, and the trial court had previously dismissed this case. On appeal, though, the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, the same court here, held that it wasn't necessary for the contractor to disclose that in its claim. So now we have a situation, if we put the two cases together, where the contractor does not have to disclose in its claim under the Contract Disputes Act a fact that the court has held would have completely excused the government from paying any damages. And that the folks in this field find even more strange. So you put the cases together and you get some really bizarre results.
Well, that's what happens in this wonderful world of contracting and contracting law. Joe Petrillo is a procurement attorney with the law firm Petrillo & Powell. As always, thanks so much for that insight.
Thank you, Tom.
You can share this interview with colleagues at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.